Moncrief on News Talk.
You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087 1400 106 is our WhatsApp number. It is indeed time for parenting once again. Joanna Fortune is with us. Good afternoon,
Good afternoon, Sean.
Right, first question is, I'm a single mum to a two-year-old boy. He spends every afternoon with his dad and stays overnight. I'm quite strict in relation to screen time and phones. I never allow my son to play on my phone. I only allow him to watch one or half an hour of TV max a day. When he's in his dad, he seems to be allowed to watch cartoons all day long or watch Ms. Rachel on YouTube. When he returns, he's extremely tired. He throws tantrums and screams for my phone. I don't give in, but I'm really struggling. I've tried to talk to his father about this, but he won't get on board. How do I manage this behaviour when his dad will not buy in? And how do I maintain these boundaries without becoming the mean parent who he'll hate?
I mean, there's a couple of things going on here.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
The first one is co-parenting is clearly not in a place that would be ideal for that child or for either of these parents. But there seems to be this knowing, I know his dad allows this, but I can't, I mean, do you know it, or are you inferring he's getting a lot of screen time and running with that? And then if you go to your ex-partner or to his dad and say, you're doing this, is that experienced as an accusation?
Yeah.
Which then elicits defensiveness. You can see how that could play out. And again, I'm not saying it is okay for the child to be on YouTube all day. He's only 2 years old. I do understand the mother's position on this. But co-parenting in a cohesive, mutually respectful way is undoubtedly a priority here, because you will be co-parenting separately together throughout this child's life.
Yeah.
And it is absolutely in this child's best interest that they see their parents at least getting along enough that they talk to each other. I can't play them off each other because they're going to let each other know what I've said.
Mm.
Children need that. It's really important. So I would name that as the main priority, not the cartoon, the screen time.
Yeah.
The priority here is getting to a place of how do we want our co-parenting to look and feel like, and what steps do we need to take? Is that a mediator? Is that something we can go to a neutral public environment and have a somewhat respectful conversation, even if it's a couple of short conversations, so you don't allow it to get defensive or boil up? And then the other side, the other layer to this is, you know, what do I do about my boundaries? This child is going to grow up with parents in different homes. They're going to move between two homes, both of which are their home.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at the moment, it's whatever, it's a Saturday and it's an overnight. But as that child gets older, that access may stay the same. It may change. It may increase. Who knows? But staying true to your parenting essentials, you know, what is it that is an essential for me? Half an hour screen time while you're so young. We can review and, you know, move that up or down as you get older. But that's an essential for me. You have to stay true to that in your home. And you're going to do a lot of, in our home, this is what we do. In our home, and you're not doing that with a judge, well, your dad shouldn't allow you to do that either. You're doing that very much to say, in this home, this is how it works. And you're just calm, clear, consistent with that. Your son may not like it. Mm. You know, if you're asking me, how do I get him to be okay with that? That's a bigger day's discussion, you know, but he may not like it and he may go, well, I'm allowed to do it over there. You can't get pulled into that. You have to say, I don't make the rules in your dad's house. In our family, this is what we do. In our home, this is what we do. But I think the co-parenting piece is important because I think, you know, Sean, co-parenting is always tricky. And I've had lots of conversations, you and I have as well, about this. It comes up a lot. But rather than instructing the other parent to do it your way, it is way more impactful if you appeal to the best interests of your son. For example, instead of saying, don't let him be on screen time, you might reframe that as, he loves outdoor play with you.
Mm.
He really loves that. Or he's really loving this storybook at the moment, so I bought a second copy to put in his bag so you have it as well. He loves stories. So you're reframing it in terms of, this is what he loves to do, rather than let me be the boss who's going to tell you what to do, which, depending on where the relationship is at, could bring up resistance.
Yeah. At the moment, there were only two.
So he's a baby.
You're not knocking much sense out of that, really.
No. Like, I mean, but I do, like, too much screen time at two isn't good for him.
Oh, absolutely not.
Like, small children need way more physical, robust, active movement than I think we are aware of. We're talking hours per day. A two-year-old child should be out, hail, rain or shine, with appropriate clothing, jumping, climbing, rolling, running. All of that is going to build and strengthen gross motor skills, coordination. It's also going to help with regulation, you know, burning off energy. So it's absolutely in the child's best interest to have less screen time, more active playtime. There's no question. But yeah, he's 2 years old. So you're just going to the whole story. This is what he loves. Oh, he's really into finger painting. I put a set of finger paints and paper in his bag, trying to do it in a constructive way.
Yeah. Do two-year-olds watch Miss Rachel? I'm surprised. She talks a lot.
Yeah, and I think that's her thing, isn't it? Like, she's a speech therapist, so I think she's talking.
Oh, is she?
Yes, yeah, I think that's her gig, is that she's a speech and language therapist, and so she's introducing language. So young children really do like her.
Oh, no, they do like her. I must say, I always found her a bit creepy.
She wasn't part of my parenting at the beginning, and by the time she was around, mine was too old, so I was like, I don't know her that well. But what I think is that, do children watch her? Such a good question. You can put something on and children will stare at it. Are they actively engaged and integrating messaging at 2 years old? Look it.
Yeah, it's the colours and the sounds.
It's exactly.
And all that kind
it's
of stuff.
Rhythm, it's movement. Yeah. That's what they're responding to.
Yeah. My daughter is 9 years old, lately has got into the bad habit of lying. She makes up lies about things that never happened in school. She'll tell her cousin she's been to concerts that she has not attended. Recently, she told her granny that I don't allow her to stay up past 7 p.m. during the summer months, which again is not true. I've been observing this behaviour for a few months now, but I haven't said anything, as I'm not sure what to say. I'm worried that it is some sort of strange manipulation tactic. Perhaps you can shed some light on the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a bit of a controversial statement, but I think learning how to tell a good lie is as developmentally important as learning to tell the truth.
Yeah.
And it takes children years to really tell a properly convincing lie, not the lie you can see through straight away. And she is around that age, you know, where you see a little spike in lying. Again, I'm reading this, you know, is it lying or is it fantasy?
Do
you know, is it a blend maybe of those two? It does sound a little bit more fantasy than lying, because she's telling stories that perhaps she wishes were true. You know, that's more in the realm of fantasy. Oh, I was at that concert. I was at that. Oh, yeah. Or we got tickets and they weren't real, or the tickets didn't arrive. You know, kids can embellish to fit into their social group. That's a very common reason to do this. Generally speaking, at 9 years old, you're talking about the lie is either to cover a mistake and ergo avoid getting in trouble, or it is to test a parental limit because developmentally that's what I'm supposed to be doing, or to play my parents off each other. You know, ergo testing the limit.
Yeah.
But, or it's to seek attention or approval from peers. It is going to fall into one of those categories. I tend in my work to find a strong, this is now more of an anecdotal observation rather than a research piece, but a correlation between lower self-esteem, higher levels of lying.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, kids who might be very anxious or, you know, ruminate and be quite worked up and edgy about things, embellish, add on details, have almost visualized something before it's happened. So whether or not it plays out that way, that's the story they tell. So it's not coming from a negative or manipulative place, but it is more. And again, at 9 years old, we do tend to see a little dip in self-esteem because peer interaction becomes more challenging.
Yeah.
So it all does sound developmental rather than a strange manipulation thing that this child is doing. Now, how I would do it is I wouldn't come at it really head on with her and say, you know, confront her about this and finger wag, because I just don't think I think you're going to get more lies actually in response to that, because she's going to actively try and get out of it. Try and stay calm. Try and ensure that you're not frustrated when you bring this up with her. So you're going to say something like, oh, your gran scolded me earlier that I'm a bit tough on you with bedtimes. And it really shocked me because you and I know I'm not. You and I know you don't go to bed at 7 in the summer, but somehow Gran thinks I do send you to bed. What's going on there? And you're coming at it more with, I got in trouble because of that story you told and it's not true and can we think about it? You're coming at it in that way with curiosity, a little bit of playfulness coming in. You're not condoning it. You're not saying it's okay. Like with younger kids, when they lie, sometimes you can enter into it and see, well, how far are you going to run with this story? Let's see if I jump into it with you, where is it going to go? And then you can end it by saying, you have an amazing imagination. That's a great story you just made up, but you are naming, I know it's made up. With a child this age, it's more, there is a cause and an effect here. When you told that lie, your granny believed it to be true. She said it to me. Yeah, I then got in trouble. And you're trying to do that so she knows, oh, hang on, there is a consequence to telling lies and it isn't okay. You're going to praise honesty. You're going to tell her, look, even if you say something and then you go, oops, I shouldn't have, so long as you tell the truth as quickly as possible, you're not in trouble.
Yeah.
That you praise honesty, you model the truth. I think as grown-ups, we do tell white lies. I think sometimes we need to, by the way, tell white lies.
Sure, yeah.
It's part of life. Yeah. We don't want to be brutally honest, but just model a little bit or even saying, oh, well, that's not the full truth. I did add a detail on there. You know, a little bit of just modeling that for her. And you can just read and discuss. I mean, obviously, The Boy Who Cried Wolf is the classic tome about lying and its consequences. But telling stories, discussing it with her, but not in a confrontational way. You can reframe it to her and say, look, sometimes I think you've got, your imagination is so good. It's putting in details that didn't happen. You're hoping that Granny will feel sorry for you, or you're hoping your friends will think you're really cool. I totally get that. But I need to know that you know this isn't true. And telling the truth is really important and it matters in this family. I would come at it in a gentle conversational way, not a confrontational one. Because what you could do, if you put it to her too abruptly, she could be embarrassed. And then you're activating a new layer of defense, because when we're embarrassed, we immediately get defensive and go, no, I mean, it wasn't that, what? And we try and get out of that feeling. So you want to keep her calm, you calm. This is one of those talk, walk, drive, walk.
Yeah.
Drive talk.
Yeah.
Those kinds of conversations.
Yeah, because she might keep digging.
Exactly
you,
what I would suspect will happen.
Her.
Yeah.
I have two little boys aged 3 and 6. The older one has just finished up junior infants. Both boys still drink milk from a baby's bottle. I want to wean both boys off their bottle this summer, particularly the older one who will be starting senior infants in September. I have tried to broach this topic with my wife, but she has said to let them be children and doesn't see the issue. I don't think it's normal to have our boys drinking from bottles at this age, but how do I convince my wife? And how should I start the process of weaning them when they're so dependent?
Now, this, how do I start the process of weaning? No, you both have to be doing this.
Yeah.
Because if one of you is allowing the bottles and the other is not, that's only going to confuse the children. And that's the worst way you could approach this. So this starts with the two of you having a conversation. Like the kind of, oh, let them be kids and thinking of, and your child at 5 or 6 is still little in your eyes, certainly. Mm. But at 6 years old, so I'm not getting into the, you know, let them be babies and is that okay? But thinking of it developmentally, by 6 years old, certainly, they should be off the bottle. For if only for other developmental considerations, like especially if it's a nighttime use of bottle, and I don't know from this letter, by the way, if it is, but if it's nighttime, the risk of them then holding milk, you know, near their teeth and their teeth are developing, you could be looking at some dental issues, tooth decay. Generally, the advice is to move them to a, you know, a sippy cup, a beaker or a straw cup, one of those kinds of things. By around 2 years old, maybe a little before, but certainly by around 2 years old, because you're paying attention to teeth at that age, you're paying attention to speech development, you're paying attention to kind of how the palate is shaping and developing. So too much time in a bottle could perhaps alter that palate development at a time when you don't want that happening. So again, they're just the more physical developmental considerations you come at it. This isn't an emotional, he's got to be a big kid now. Mm. It's not like that. You're thinking about it more, what is in his best interest in terms of speech, mouth shape, teeth, that kind of, if you're doing this, and I think, you know, it's time to certainly start talking about it, involve both children in it. You know, make it a bit of an exciting thing where you go to the shop, they get to pick out their new water bottle with the little sports bottle top on it, or straw, pop-up straw, whatever it is that you're doing, you know, with their favorite character or their favorite color, and you name it, this is your big kid water bottle now. This is what you're going to be using for all of your drinks. And the other side of them having a bottle is, I am imagining, Sean, it must bring them great comfort.
Yeah.
You know, it's
very
soothing.
Sure.
And I, you know, so they're not going to say, Sure thing. There you go. So you want to look at how are you going to replace that comfort seeking? Because you might be listening to this and saying, oh, they don't have it at night, but it tends to be when they're tired or after school or whatever it is. So how are you going to replace that bottle comfort with another form of comfort? Think about cuddling up on the sofa, spending 15, 20 minutes reading a book together, or just having a cuddle and a chat with a soft blanket. So there's still that nice, when at times when you know they comfort seek, you're replacing what would have been provided by the bottle with something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't want to get pulled into a parent's argument about this, but I, you know, I'd certainly say it's time to start thinking about it.
I think you've given him some pretty good points to bring up, though, in the course of that discussion. Joanna, thanks a million.
Thanks so much,
as ever.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.